Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
Hey everyone, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer, and today on The Breakdown, as coronavirus cases surge and California announces a new shelter-in-place order, we're very excited to have with us a man who you might not have heard of just a year ago, but who is now one of the most recognizable faces in America.
We're talking, of course, about Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's head of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, if you hadn't heard yet. And he's also become known as America's doctor over the course of this pandemic. Dr. Fauci, welcome to The Breakdown.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
We're very excited to get to speak with you. As we mentioned, we just heard moments ago Governor Gavin Newsom here in California issue a stay-at-home order that will potentially affect the entire state. We're talking regional, divided by region, and when ICUs hit only 15% capacity, it will trigger this order. He's saying people don't need to, you know, they can still go out and exercise and such, but he wants really people to limit their activity. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I've actually spoken to some of the health authorities in California, and I think that this is a prudent and correct decision on the part of the governor. I do. And the reason is that you are all on a brink, literally on the threshold of getting the almost unimaginable situation of getting the healthcare system overrun. You just can't let that happen. That is unimaginable and unacceptable. And I think to anticipate that as you look at the numbers throughout the country, including in California, that the numbers are going up. It's a steep slope. And we have not yet seen the full brunt of what we expect to be yet again another surge, hopefully a mini surge as opposed to a major one. But there almost invariably will be a surge associated with what went on last week with Thanksgiving, with the travel of people coming into San Francisco, the travel of people coming back from where you came from, and the congregate settings of dinners, innocent, understandable dinners of friends and family, that generally will result in a spike. The trouble is the spike won't come for about 2.5 to 3 weeks after the Thanksgiving holiday, which would put it right before the Christmas and Hanukkah holiday, which is kind of a double whammy. So we are in a really precarious situation. And because of the stress on the healthcare system, I think what the governor did was both prudent and advisable. I spoke to some of his health people and I said I would back them in that decision. So I certainly back what the governor's doing.
You know, we've seen governors in different states doing this very differently, you know, from places like North Dakota, where the governor has said, I don't believe in a mask mandate, to California, which has been, you know, more shut down, more cautious. And yet we seem to be seeing the same result to a certain extent, no matter what states or, for that matter, countries do. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you perceive that? And what do you make of it? What does it tell us?
I think initially you may think you're seeing the same result, but when it really plays out, there's no doubt in my mind that when you compare those states, those cities, those locations that implemented significant public health measures, that could be things short of a shutdown, or it could include a shutdown, and compare it with a comparable state, city, town, location, all other things being equal, there's no doubt that when you mitigate, be that just uniform mask wearing, distancing, avoiding crowds, or the kinds of shutdowns that you're talking about, it does make a difference. And you should be assured of that.
Do you feel, I mean, one of the things we have seen in our very sort of diverse nation, as Scott mentioned, is different approaches, but also different communication, mixed messages from President Trump on down. I'm curious how much you feel, because the truth is, if, you know, I live in San Francisco, but what people do in other parts of my state matter. How much do you feel like we need to focus on just having clearer communication and guidelines across the United States so that people are kind of hearing the same message?
Yeah, said another way, mixed messages are bad. Okay, so that's the short answer to what you're saying. You're right. One of the problems inherent in mixed messages is that provides license for people to do things according to their own preconceived notions. Because if they hear that going left is right, going right is right, then they say, I'm going to go wherever I want to go because it's a 50-50 chance. That's not good. We need consistent messages at all levels.
To what extent do you think it's harder in a state like California, which is so large, 39, 40 million people, is it harder in a place like this to come up with a consistent message?
Well, you know, it depends. Harder than what? Harder than a place like Wyoming that has less than a million people? Yeah, of course. You know, you have a very diverse state. I mean, you know, the northern part of California is quite different from Southern California in so many ways. I'm telling you guys things you know better than I do.
You've been out here. But, we know that.
Yeah. Yes, of course, messaging is much harder when you have a very large, diverse state.
Are we where you thought we would be at this point in March? Better, worse? How are we faring?
I think I would have to say, honestly, worse. Mm. I thought that we were going to have a uniform public health response that would not have allowed us to never get below a precarious baseline. And every time we try to do something like open up the economy, we'd blip up and then come down and then we do this, we'd blip up. And now we're going into winter, we're going into the holidays, and we're seeing the same thing. However, having said all those sobering statements, help is on the way because we have an extraordinarily efficacious vaccines, plural, more than one vaccine, that will start to be implemented and distributed in the middle and end of December. And then as we get into January, February, March, more and more and more people will be vaccinated so that by the time we get to April, it will be available for the general public. You know, people who are young like you guys, no underlying disease, you know, you're ready
to go. Keep talking.
Right. And in fact, once we get a substantial proportion of the population vaccinated, we'll get that umbrella of herd immunity that will ultimately crush this outbreak. We will crush this outbreak, I guarantee you. That to me is incentive for now in a precarious situation that we're in, and we don't have a vaccine widely available. It's more incentive to double down even more and say, although things like lockdowns, things that the governor is trying to do are difficult and straining, you know, your comfort, your economy, and all those things. The fact is that at the end of the day, it will get us through. And then when a vaccine comes in full blast, we're going to be out of this.
Well, let me ask you about that.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you about that, because as you know, there's a lot of skepticism and doubt, even among some health professionals, according to polls, about whether or not this vaccine is safe, whether it's been rushed, whether it's been overly politicized, which, of course, you know, is not helpful. The president's press secretary today corrected a reporter who called it the Pfizer vaccine. And she said, you mean the Trump vaccine? I mean, all these things can't be helpful. So how do you get over that?
I have to take a deep breath now before I answer that. Well, let's go step by step. These skepticisms are understandable when there are mixed messages. But take two things: the speed at which it has been done, and then take the determination that it's safe and effective. First, the speed. The fact that we were able to go from the recognition of a brand new virus in January to vaccine that's able to be distributed by December is a completely unprecedented accomplishment. It is spectacular. Not because it was rushed by compromising safety or scientific integrity, because of the extraordinary scientific advances that have been made in vaccine platform technologies, which is the fruit of basic and applied research that's been going on for decades. This isn't something that just popped up. This is people who've been working throughout the country and the world for decades on exquisite technologies that have allowed us to do things in weeks to months that a decade ago would have taken several years. So the speed does not compromise anything. Then you say, what about the safety and the efficacy? Is this safe and effective, or is this the administration trying to prove that they've done something really well, or the companies trying to make a lot of money? It's neither of the two. And here's why. Because the determination of safety and efficacy is made by an independent data and safety monitoring board that has allegiances not to the president, not to the administration, and not to the company. It has an allegiance to the American public. They are a group of independent scientists, statisticians, ethicists, vaccinologists. They look at the data, and when they determine that the data show safety and efficacy, they then, and only then, release it to the company, which then examines it, gives it to the FDA, where career scientists, not politicians, but career scientists who do this every day for decades, they examine the data, and then in accordance with their advisory committee, which is another independent committee, determine if it's safe and able to be given to the American public. So you have a process that is not only independent, it's completely transparent. So nobody can hide anything, because the data ultimately is going to be published in a peer-reviewed journal. So we've got to be able to communicate that to the American public, that even though there's a lot of skepticism, the process is independent and transparent, period.
Right. Fauci says take the vaccine. You heard it here. I want to switch gears in the last few minutes we have with you to talk a little bit about your previous experience. This was World AIDS Day this week. That was really where you cut your teeth as a young government scientist. And it was a tough time. I mean, there was a lot of anger from the, especially the gay community, around what they felt like was not an urgent response from the government. And you got a lot of flack personally, and you ended up kind of reaching out and really going into the community and getting to know the people who were protesting against you. And I'm just curious what you learned then that you've kind of brought with you now. I mean, that was such a charged and also terrifying time for so many people.
Well, that was really one of the more transforming periods in my own professional career, in my own life, in which I made a decision, which retrospectively really turned out to be a good decision, was to reach out to the community. In this case, it was dominated by young gay men in San Francisco and in New York and in Los Angeles, because they had some very valid points that the government, the scientific and regulatory community, just did not fully appreciate the situation they were in. And they excluded the constituents from participation in important decision-making that had a great impact on their lives and their death. And yet, no one was listening to them. So they became iconoclastic, theatrical, confrontative, which unfortunately turned off the government and the scientific and regulatory community even more. What I did, which I think was one of the better things I've ever done in my career, was I said, you know, let me listen to what they're saying, put aside the theatrics, put aside the iconoclastic behavior, and listen to what they were saying. And it became eminently clear to me that what they were saying really made sense. And if I were in their shoes, I would have been doing exactly what they were doing. And that's when I said, I need to sit down and start talking to these people. And once we did that, we found out that we had a lot in common. And that's when the bonds of collaboration began decades ago, to the point now where they're a very productive component of what we do. So it turned out to be a really good event, good result.
Speaking of theatrics and iconoclasts, you might describe the current president with some of those kinds of words. And you've worked for a lot of presidents, very different approaches, different styles. What have you learned, both from, you know, your experience with the AIDS epidemic and working, you know, at these levels of government about politicians and about political leadership?
Well, you know, I've served for six administrations, soon to serve my seventh. And they're all different. And their administrations are often determined and driven by the circumstances in which their administration takes place. I mean, a big difference between the early years of HIV with Reagan, between situation with George W. Bush with 9/11, with the outbreaks of Ebola and Zika and pandemic flu with Obama, and now with the COVID outbreak with Trump. So they have different challenges and they handle them in different ways. The one thing I've learned is that it's important as a scientist and as a public health person that it's absolutely essential that I stay above and beyond the politics and focus completely on the public health, the scientific issues, because that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Once you start getting involved in ideology and political things, you just lose any credibility. So I have stayed completely away from the politics and focused on what my job is, which is public health and the safety and the health of the American public. You do that, you're in good shape.
That's the Sicilian roots help a little bit.
It does.
I think you don't give yourself enough credit for how politically astute you are, however.
You're a survivor.
Yeah, nothing personal, strictly business, right?
Dr. Anthony Fauci, thank you so much for your time and all the work you do on behalf of all of us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right, we're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Erin Alday. She is health reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
I'm John Glenn Hill, host of The Weeds. And I know that politics can feel like a joke, and not always in the ha-ha funny way. On The Weeds, we try to split the difference.
When you think run out of money, you think that we're going to get to a point where, like, one guy retires and Social Security is like, sorry, y'all, got a board up.
Like, that's it. Sorry, he got the last check.
I always call him Jim. Like, Jim got it. Sorry, y'all. He got the last check, and that's all the checks we got, and Social Security is no more.
Check out The Weeds every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer, and we are now thrilled to be joined by Erin Alday. She is health reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle and a former colleague of mine. Good to see ya.
Great to see you, Marisa. Thanks for having me.
So you just heard, oh my gosh, we got to talk to Dr. Fauci. Can I like geek out a little bit on that?
I can't believe you're making me follow Dr. Fauci.
Such an iconic voice now, yeah.
I know. So, I mean, Erin, you've been following this all year. You have been the health reporter at the Chronicle for a very long time, written a lot about the AIDS epidemic that Dr. Fauci spoke about. But, I mean, broad brushstrokes, any just reaction to what you heard from him?
You know, I will say, I mean, you know, he obviously is just so kind of pragmatic about this. And I think that's one of the things that really people respond to is just how he just kind of lays it out in such a way that it's very much based on facts and science, a very understanding of where people are coming from. But like, he's just very blunt in the way he approaches everything, right? Like, I think that's something that people that makes him so effective as sort of a communicator and a leader in this is that he's blunt. He doesn't kind of hold back. He just like the way he was talking about California and his reaction to the order today from Governor Newsom, you know, was very much like, yeah, things are not looking great. This is the right thing to do. That's, you know,
it's kind of refreshing. Nice to hear.
It is very refreshing. Like, he doesn't dance around it. He doesn't use the sort of official language. And he doesn't go to like scare tactics either. He's just very, you know, like I said, very blunt with it, very straight.
Well, and it's a sort of an indication of his the status that he has, that Governor Newsom apparently reached out to him and asked him if he would support what they're doing. And he wanted to get that the blessing from Dr. Yes. Fauci. Yeah, let's transition to the stay-at-home order that could be triggered depending on ICU capacities. What are your thoughts about how the governor is handling this? It's been sort of a long and winding road. People are exhausted. Parents are exhausted. Small businesses are frustrated. Do you think that, you know, the message that he gave today is one that will, you know, help us get through this, basically?
I think it's really tough. We're kind of in quite the spot now. Let me start with the good side, which is, the Bay Area is still in actually largely pretty good shape with the situation with the ICU and the hospital situation, with the exception of a few counties, you know, notably Santa Clara County. I think it's important to note that in the governor's announcement today, he mentioned that, you know, he broke down the state into five regions and pointed out that the Bay Area is the only one that likely will not be affected by this new order imminently, right? Like, so the rest of the state is just in a matter of days, this would probably be applied. Whereas the Bay Area, you know, it would be potentially within a matter of, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. So I think that that's, you know, important. I think things look good here. But, you know, I think what we're seeing here with this new order, which is frankly really similar to what we saw back in March, right? Like, with just a couple of exceptions, probably retail staying open, the most notable one, it's really very, very similar to what we saw before. And I think what that tells us is that, you know, we've tried the scattershot approach. We've tried to do this sort of very measured, very targeted, very kind of focused, reopening and kind of defined things. And it's just not working with this particular surge. It's, for whatever reason, it spiraled too fast. It's kind of just got out of our hands. And it's for the first time really putting pressure on the hospitals. And so, you know, I've talked with a lot of experts, in fact, this week, who were just pointing out, like, at this point, not only are people fatigued, but they're confused. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but I'm about as tapped into this as anybody. And I couldn't tell you what's allowed from one county to the next. I can't keep track. I have to look it up.
And so that's, I almost said that to Fauci. It's like we've all have to become the Faucis of our own household, basically, right?
I mean,
and
it's true.
It's hard. And everyone's, I mean, one thing we've learned is how different everybody's idea of what is risky is, and, you know, how challenging that can be, because you can be talking to someone you think is on the same page as you, and they're just like doing something that you would never do. And it's super.
Right.
But I am curious, like, do you feel as if we are changing? I know you said the order is similar, and I agree, but it also seems like there's some shift in, like, Newsom saying today, like, the bars are going to close and the schools will stay open. Now, granted, most schools aren't open and we're still struggling with that. But do you sense that there's any shift in terms of priorities from the spring that we're finally kind of wrapping our head around?
Honestly, I mean, a little bit. I will say, you know, there certainly is a little bit. I don't know if it's priorities so much as an understanding of where the risky locations are. Like you pointed out, yeah, it's notable that they're saying, you know, schools can stay open or whatever, but, you know, most of them aren't. I mean, certainly in the Bay Area, those have been, I mean, that's a whole other can of worms that we can talk about. The fact that we just don't really have good guidance on schools, it's up to the districts. Like, there's so many issues that are at play there, but, you know, it's all fine and good to say that schools stay open and bars are closed. But the truth is, bars haven't been open in much of the state throughout this whole thing anyway, and schools have been or allowed to be open and aren't. So, I mean, it's a little bit, you know, of politics there, I think, to be able to say that when in fact it's just sort of doesn't really mean a lot. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't know anybody who's been going. I mean, I haven't been to a bar in 2020, probably.
I can't even, like, this curfew. It's like, who cares? Nobody leaves their house after 9 o'clock anyway.
Exactly. We've got parklets across from our house where they're doing comedy night in the streets, and it's all kinds of things happening in the Mission, for sure.
But I do think, I mean, this is also very, we're talking about a very Bay Area conversation. I do think things are very different in other parts of the state, you know, more rural counties, and God knows what's happening down in Southern California. You know, I think there has been a lot more of that socializing, people kind of going out and about and doing that in Southern California.
Well, than up here. Totally. And I think in some of the parts of the state that are going to be subject to this new order are exactly the places. Like I was in Lake County a few weeks ago, very few people wearing masks in restaurants, you know, and those are the places that may just ignore all these orders. But I want to ask you about leadership because we, you know, you heard Dr. Fauci talking about the difficulty of kind of, you know, just navigating different styles and personalities. And, you know, London Breed has by and large gotten high marks in San Francisco for her handling of this. And the city has done reasonably well, certainly relative to most parts of the state. But at the same time, you know, she, like the governor, got caught going to French Laundry, which undermines her sort of moral authority. And now she's got all these other crises going on with the FBI investigation. I know you're not a politics reporter all the time, but, you know, how would you grade the job she's doing and how she's being affected by all these outside forces?
Well, like you said, I'm not a politics reporter, so I probably, it's hard for me to say, especially the stuff that's outside the realm of public health, kind of how that's affecting her. I certainly get the impression that at least as far as San Franciscans go, that there is still, you know, a measure of respect and willingness to follow her. I don't get the sense that people in the city are rebelling against, I mean, they're disappointed. And they may even be pissed off, and the restaurants especially may be not happy with her. I think that there's potential to spin this as sort of like a, you know, very relatable, teachable. I mean, if I were in her shoes, that's certainly how I would be playing it. Like, look,
we all get sick of this. Yeah, we're all fatigued.
Yeah, but we don't all go to French Laundry.
Yeah,
well, exactly. So, I mean, to her credit, she's owning it as much as she can and is saying, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. That was a mistake. And what else can you do, really? But, you know, I do think that it's interesting because I don't think in San Francisco it's necessarily going to be an impact as much. It's more kind of that how that gets perceived outside.
The broader narrative by all these people who are skeptical.
And that's
anyway.
Where Newsom is actually in more trouble than she is, right. Because he's and got to have the whole state.
And he's the governor. This is, you know, we only got to one question on this, but you've covered so much of, you know, the fallout from the AIDS crisis in San Francisco. And I'm just curious, like, if you had what you thought hearing what Dr. Fauci said about, you know, that idea of like bringing people in and not just being these kind of scientists in their like ivory tower. Is that something that you have heard in terms of his impact on, you know, that epidemic and just, I don't know, did people in that community still recognize him from those days?
I think one thing that's really people really value and respect about Dr. Fauci is that he got off to a rough start with them. Like,
yeah.
He was not loved, and he was really, and he was attacked a lot. I mean, there was a really bad time there. And I think what I've always really respected about him, and, you know, I've talked with him a few times over the years, is that he had that experience and he learned from it and he took it forward, and he'll be the first to say, like, yeah, it was rough. And the key thing was to be able to like take that, to be able to listen to what people were really saying and work with them. And even as they kept being mad at you, to keep working with them. And to, you know, he was one of those like first real public health leaders to say, we need to bring the people to the table, you know, the people who are directly impacted it. Like this whole idea of with HIV and AIDS, even saying they're not AIDS patients. These are people living with AIDS. These are people living with HIV, like how you talk about them. Like that was sort of a big part of sort of his, you know, response and how he worked with these communities and recognizing they needed that voice.
Well, and I think it's easy to underestimate or forget how big a deal that was because no one had done that before. I mean, these were exactly. Ivory towers, you know, and they were the scientists and they knew everything. And to really
listen. And the president wouldn't even talk about it.
The president wouldn't
talk
about it. And for him to listen and, you know, and it was a real testament to him when Larry Kramer, who started ACT UP, died before he died. He said, I love that guy. I love Anthony Fauci. You know, and it was a real tribute.
And I did spin it as that he said, as though he was doing this for the people with HIV and AIDS, but that's actually not the case. He was recognizing it as they had something to add and contribute. Like they were a necessary voice in our response to this epidemic. It wasn't just doing them a favor. It was like, no, if we're going to resolve this, we need to bring them to the table, which I think, like you said, that was totally game changing.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but it'll be very interesting to see Dr. Fauci's next chapter under President O'Biden.
Sure, is counting the days.
That was amazing. I'm going to have to take a second there. Erin Aldea, San Francisco Chronicle Health Reporter, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Vic, for having me.
That's going to do it for this edition of Political Breakdown. We are a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our producer is Guy Marzorati. Our engineer is Katie McMurrin. KQED's team includes Holly Kernan, Ethan Tovin-Lindsay, Vinny Tong, Erica Aguilar, and Jonathan Blakely. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. You can follow me on Twitter at mlagos. Thanks for listening. Stay safe.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Think the case for global decline has been oversold? Then you should check out the latest season of What Could Go Right. It's co-hosted by me, Emma Varvalugas, and Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel. What Could Go Right may not have all the answers, but it asks the key questions. Every week, we discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or sensationalism. We talk with guests like NPR anchor Steve Inskeep, democracy expert Yasha Munk, prolific writer and historian Rebecca Solnit, and green energy entrepreneur Jigar Shah. So go ahead, listen to What Could Go Right on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.